One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all of you. Hallie, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I have nothing new to report. Every day is a winding road.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. How are you doing?
Fine. Also, not a lot to report.
Yeah, we're not gals with a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, so...
Hey, guys. Hallie here. We're here to tell you about our next live show, which will be Sunday, November 24th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. And we are doing a movie I absolutely loved. I just saw it, Smile 2.
Yes, we are a return to form, just a classic live show online from home. All of the bells and whistles that you can expect, like the chat and a drinking game and old merch. You know, we got merch classic in there. But I'm so excited for this one. It's a perfect post-Thanksgiving recovery for you if you need to see something less scary than your family. Sunday, November 24th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
So don't forget to smile, too. And until then,
keep it spooky and we'll see you there.
So I guess we'll get into it.
Yeah, we may as well just, like, hop right in. Cozy month continues on.
Absolutely. We are doing a movie that I had never seen before, and I'm really excited to cover that is 1980's The Fog from...
The Fog.
Oh, my God. From one Mr. John Carpenter. And before we get into it, I'm going to ask Allison, what is something that you really enjoy about the coziest season? Autumn.
Soup.
Okay, great.
I love soup. That's a known, famously, I love soup. It just, like, it is something that, like, I think is pretty easy to cook well. And it's, like, easy to have, like, batched out. And, like, I feel like I'm, like, way more on my shit in, like, fall, winter with, like, cooking and then eating the things I have cooked than I am in the summer, which is more of a... It's salads, it's fresh veg, everything's, like, so herby that you're like, oh, this all just, like, dies immediately and I get sick. I don't know. Soup I could eat all day, every single day. I love soup. So.
I did just make a soup this week.
What soup did you make?
I feel like this is an advice if anyone's looking for, it did make me think immediately of Pride, but if anyone's looking to do some sort of a purple sort of dinner party or rainbow dinner party for whatever reason you might be, is that I made a zuppa toscana, a slightly healthier version. From, of course, inspired by the best soup at Olive Garden. And I had carrots. I was like, oh, I'll throw the carrots in. That'll be good. But I had forgotten I had purchased purple carrots because it's fall.
Oh.
And I went to the farmer's market.
Yeah.
So when I put it in the soup, it's a cream-based soup. So the soup is this vivid lavender.
Ooh.
And it's very beautiful. And it's just from both the purple carrots, and also I had some purple potatoes. I'm like, I'll just throw that in as well.
Yeah, it's great.
But it is, it's giving a hook. It's sort of a supernatural Star Trek soup.
Yeah, very much not a thing. Like, because even like a borscht is like a redder than it is purple.
Yeah, it's closer to an actual plant color. And this is, it's pastel. So in case that appeals to someone, the soup's great. Just make a regular cream-based soup with purple carrots. I think you'll be good to go.
Well, that's a lovely idea.
Thank you. I think for me, my cozy thing is going to be having the window open when you're sleeping. Heaven. And you can do that this summer, obviously, but this is when we really get the good breeze.
No, you need, I like having, I like morgue style temperatures when I'm sleeping. So like the colder it is, the more likely I am to have my window open. My only problem is I have like the kind of windows that can't have screens. And with Riz, I can't really open windows.
Yeah.
And be asleep. Like, I can crack my one window in the living room and kind of, like, bop around the apartment, and he mostly just leaves alone. But in my sleep, I can't really leave my windows open, which is devastating.
That's so interesting.
Because I love open windows.
Yeah, I feel like every window should have a screen. That just feels like the better
option. For, like, even, like, the take Riz out of it, but, like, bugs. I'm like, no, I want to be able to open the window. And, like, we have the lantern fly infestation on the side of our building, so it's, like, they're always flying around anyway. It's really awful. I'm gonna keep pushing my building and be like, can you like help me figure out the screen situation? Because I want to open a window, but I don't want to lose my cat or to get bugs.
Yeah, to be swarmed by lantern flies in your sleep. God,
I hate them.
Speaking of fate, pretty much as bad as that. Ooh. We, of course, always have Allison watch the trailer for the film every week.
Yes.
Allison, what did you think about the trailer for John Carpenter's The Fog?
The score is just like, it's perfect. It's you know, it's just exactly what you want. 1980 horror movie, just really, it's like they keep playing into like The Fog being between midnight and 1 a.m.
Yes.
And I'm like, why is it so specific to a time?
Well, that it is the witching hour. They've decided that is the witching hour, and that is the hour in which witchery things happen.
Yes.
And of course, just to note, as I think probably most people know, but John Carpenter does score, I think, all of his films.
Yeah,
and did score this film.
Yeah, it's so. I mean, when the score is excellent, and like the visuals of like the fog rolling in are so great and so cool, but. It is like, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of like rules to this that are taking me out of how scary it could be with like,
was
it 1 a.m. yet? It'll be over at 1 a.m. Like, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening here.
There's a lot of time stuff, a lot of conversation with the fog, where the fog's at, how the fog's acting. It is a little, there's too much of the fog, which is funny to say in a movie called The Fog. But I agree, there's a lot of logistical conversations about weather and other elements.
Yeah.
I'd also like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of the spirits of the wronged rising up against your American town, which was founded on corrupt and homicidal crimes?
Oh, bad? It'd be all of America.
I know, that's the thing. Which I guess is the point of this film.
Every place in this country is built on corruption and crime and murder. So, I mean, I guess that makes it scarier because I'm like, well, that could be anybody, anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the fog, like, it's both, like, scary, like, the concept of, like, being in fog is scary, but fog as, like, an entity that is creating stuff isn't as scary to me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, this is a really enjoyable movie, and I had fun. But it'd be funny to meet someone who's genuinely scared of this.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of scare. It's atmospheric.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a small town. It's,
you
know, what happens to different characters. What is revealed about the town's history versus someone just seeing fog and screaming is very funny to
me. Yeah.
And this, of course, stars Adrienne Barbeau, who was John Carpenter's wife at the time. And it was written... It was directed, of course, by John Carpenter. It was co-written by Deborah Hill, who is John Carpenter's longtime collaborator and former partner as well. And we also get a gander at Jamie Lee Curtis. This is came out 2 years after Halloween. And so he obviously liked to hire the same people a lot. We also have Nancy Loomis, who plays Annie, the friend in Halloween 1 and 2. And she's really funny in this because she is the assistant to the mayor, and the mayor is played by Janet Leigh from Psycho.
Oh.
And she's obviously an older Janet Leigh, and she plays the uptight, the mayor who wants to have the best centennial that any small town has ever had, and we don't need to worry about the darker part of our past. We'll just forge ahead. And is that a bunch of fog coming in? Well, it doesn't matter. This is about America. She's great in that. And they're a very funny comedic duo in this movie.
Yeah.
And I loved that. Like, I was like, that's such a small, like a smart casting decision.
Mm-hmm.
We also got Hal Holbrook. We have everyone in this is making a meal out of the fog.
Yes.
I would say a big old dish of fog for everyone involved. Finally, would you like to guess the twist in the fog?
Guess the twist.
Would you say there is a twist?
There's a twist. It's like it's treated as a twist, but I will say when it happens, I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay.
So yes, I would say if that helps you guess what happens.
I'm going to guess that the fog is like, man-made.
Ooh, okay, great.
And that it, like, contains a chemical that's, like, making some stuff happen.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so, like, easily timed to be between midnight and 1 a.m. And there,
see, love it.
There's, like, people behind, like, the fog's appearance, and then the chaos that ensues, like, benefits them in somehow.
Perfect. Love it. Excellent guess, as always. Well, not always, but most of the time.
You know, sometimes.
And sometimes you get the nail on the fucking head, Allison.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
All right. Well, let us begin ruining the fog. All right. Text on the screen. Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? Edgar Allan Poe. I'm going to go ahead and just lay that to rest. No, it's just.
Yeah.
It's just this. It's just slop. It's just meat.
Yeah.
Oh, we a video game? No, bitch. It's this. Sorry.
Yes.
Grow
this
up.
It.
This is it. This is it.
This is it.
Allison, we see a dangling watch, a timepiece, if you will, and a group of children all bundled up around a campfire. And old Mr. Machen, he snaps the watch closed and he tells the children, 11:55, almost midnight. I'm like, that's late for kids to be up. But I guess it was
the
80s.
Why are they up so late?
It was barely the 80s. I think you didn't have to sleep in the 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
It's enough time right before 12. In 5 minutes, it'll be the 21st of April. 100 years ago, on April 21st, in the waters around Spivey Point, a small clipper ship drew towards land. Suddenly, the fog rolled in, and they were lost until they saw a light on the shore. They steered a course towards the light, but it was a campfire just like this one. And the ship crashed against the rocks, shearing it in two, and it sank with all the men aboard. And at the bottom of the sea lies the Elizabeth Dane with her crew, their lungs full of salt water. And above, the fog lifted as quickly as it came, and it never came again. But it is told by the fishermen and their fathers and their fathers before them that when the fog returns to Antonio Bay, that the men from the Elizabeth Dane will arise and look for that campfire, that same one that led them to their dark, icy death. And all the kids are like, campfire, that's what we're doing. It's genuinely a great, I was like, that would have gotten me as a kid. I'm like,
no,
we gotta go home.
Sure.
Just then, the church bell rings midnight. John Carpenter's The Fog. We look out over beautiful Antonio Bay. We are in Northern California. It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Again, everyone needs a jacket, but it's stunning. And it's a little small town of Spivey Point. We see that there is a man working at a church finishing up. And again, here, like you said, which I think is a really excellent point, sorry, the name of the town is Antonio Bay. It is within Antonio Bay, okay. And Spivey Point is part of it. Sorry. Okay. So the town is Antonio Bay. And there is a man working till damn near midnight at the local church, which again is like, because it has to be at midnight, like everyone is up at midnight, which I do agree is very funny.
Well, because there's truly nothing spooky about like 8:30, you know?
Yes,
like
when most people would be like, oh, I gotta start winding down. I'm gonna probably head home.
Time to put on TV and...
Yeah. And of course, this man, his name is Bennett. He is John Carpenter. He is uncredited. And he stops in to tell the priest, Father Malone, who is drinking heavily, that he's done. And the father said, come in tomorrow at 4 p.m. Father Malone offers him a glass of wine. And Bennett says, can I get paid now? And the priest says, hey, how about you come in at 6 instead of 4 tomorrow, okay? It's 2 hours less. Bennett leaves and Father Malone drinks alone. He hears a sound and he follows after him. He calls, Bennett? He walks in a room just in time to see one of the stones almost like leap out of the wall onto the table. And behind it, we see what appears to be a leather-bound journal.
Okay.
He opens it. It is the journal of one of his ancestors, Father Patrick Malone, 1880. And I was like, his dad was a priest? Oh, they're not Catholic. So I was like, how would that be possible?
How?
His mother's the surgeon. But yes, I forgot other religions will let you do that. Makes a lot more sense. And of course, journals, the original TikTok. He starts to page through what's happening. What was this person's life like 100 years ago? Unfortunately, it's full of bad tidings and horrific omens. April 30th, midnight till 1, belongs to the dead. Good Lord, deliver us. We then hear Stevie Wayne, played by Adrian Barbeau on the radio. And this is an incredible character. I really like Adrian Barbeau. And she is a beautiful single mother who lives in Antonio Bay.
Mom who works two jobs. She loves a kid. Reba.
No, she is 100% Reba. I would absolutely watch a show because it is 1980. So she she runs the radio station in that area. She bought it. And she runs it out of the lighthouse. So it's aesthetically appealing. And so she looks fabulous in the clothes.
Incredible.
And then also she is the voice, right? So everyone listens to her. Everyone knows she's able to communicate. It's almost like the telephone. She's phoning everyone in town because it's such a small bandwidth. And her radio voice is the radio voice that like we grew up with, where it's like the Delilah's. So it's like, it's very soothing, but it's also kind of sex kitten.
Yes.
She's like, oh, hang on one second.
You feel like she's in a bathtub.
Yes, absolutely. She's in a bathtub. She has a landline phone. Yes. It's white. It has like the curvy handle.
Yeah,
she's
champagne covered in bubbles. Flute in one hand.
100%. Her hair's up.
Yes. Yes.
Her hair's up, but she's a brunette because she's classy.
Yes.
She says, let me be the first to wish happy birthday to Antonio Bay. We're 100 years old today. And it's like, yes, well, aside from all the history before that, I suppose we are.
Sure.
But it is the centennial of this town. It is crazy that our bicentennial of the nation was only 76. So this is the 100 years. And she says, the weatherman says there might be rain tonight, but I think he's working too hard. Allison, it's after midnight. Everything in town starts to fall to shit. All of the pay phones are ringing off the hook.
Oh, God.
Quarters are falling out of them. We see a man cleaning up the general store. He then drinks orange juice out of a cart and then puts it back. Again, I do like those details.
I do too, but it's like, oh no.
Sir. He's sweeping in the place. Suddenly, he hears shattering glass and all of the glass containers in the refrigerated section start shaking. Mm-hmm. There's a folksy wooden sign breaks. The lights go on at the gas station. The nozzle leaps off the gas pump and starts spraying gas all over the ground. First of all, it's dangerous. But then my thought was like, oh no, the gas station attendant's going to be so sad all this gas is gone. Because it's just like, you see it's like racking up like the price.
And it's like, you're not getting any money.
You can't scoop that gas back up, I don't think.
I don't think so.
We see the mechanic lift starts to lift the cars up and down. Again, I'm thinking of this poor small business owner. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a mess when he gets in. Or she. It is the 80s after all. We see a woman, Sandy, stagger out. Again, she is Annie in the first two Halloweens. Staggers out to hear the commotion. She looks out the window. And then she turns back to see the TV turn on. And her chair slides across the floor. She never mentions this again. That should have been a bigger deal to her.
Yes. That's terrifying. Say something to someone about
that. If you see something, say something. Please. Stevie Wayne sounds off again. 6 minutes after midnight. It's a beautiful full moon tonight, not a cloud in the sky. And I'll be here till 1. So join me for this 12 to 1, the witching hour. Again, they just declare it's the witching hour. Ugh. Keep me turned on, and I'll try to do the same for you.
Ooh.
We see a man driving. His name is Nick, and he picks up a hitchhiker. Her name is Elizabeth, and she is Jamie Lee Curtis. He hands her an open beer, and she takes it. They immediately start flirting.
Hey.
The early 80s was
different time.
Crazy. Elizabeth tells him that I've never been hitchhiking before. I have to ask you, are you weird? The guy says, I am. She's like, oh, thank God, because the last guy was so normal, it killed me. Suddenly, all of the windows in this man's car explode.
Okay.
He slams on the brakes. And we hear Stevie again. So it's the KAB lighthouse. So the KAB is the call letters, which again, think would be a fun job. Because remember, there's the centennial celebration later tonight. And we get a call from weatherman Dan. Luckily, the weatherman is obsessed with her. So he's constantly calling her to flirt with her and then also give her weather updates. Very convenient. She says, He asks, are you going to go to the centennial? She says, I don't think so. Again, if I'm not on the radio, I just have to play she just plays like a loop of advertising, basically. So she's like, if I'm not on, so I might as well, I don't think I'm going to go. She's like, well, you know, I just want to give you a tip, some news. Says there's a trawler called the Seagrass 15 miles out, and there's a fog bank moving in. And so you could tell people. Stevie gets on and is like, hello to the Seagrass. I know you're listening out there. And we see the men out there. There's two men getting drunk and one guy, Al, who's like actually piloting the ship and is not seemingly drunk. And they all talk about how hot she is. Everyone's like a local. So like, oh yeah, like her son is on my kid brother's little league team. I've seen her. She's a hot mom. And the other guy's like, oh, she has a kid. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were married. You really care. But they're arguing. Okay. And the sober guy, Al's like, well, there's no fog bank out there. What is she talking about? He looks, suddenly a fog bank appears and it's sort of glowing. And he calls the two over to look. It looks like there's a bright light coming out of it, which is, again, they're seamen. They've been out here.
Yeah.
Allison, the generator in the ship blows, so the power goes out. Al and one of the other guys runs up to the deck, and unfortunately, they see a old-timey 1800 ship drift past.
Not great.
And they hear something splash into the water. And on the deck, out of the dense fog, comes two figures, one with a metal fish hook and the other with like a hooked pole.
Ugh.
And one of the guys goes, who is that? It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't
they're guys with ill intent and nautical weapons.
Yes.
It doesn't matter who their identities
who
have no meaning.
Gives a
in
shit.
This.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we see Al. His mouth opens and a sword stabs him through the chest from behind, and he and his buddy are murdered by the ghosts of seemingly long dead seamen. I keep saying that, but it's the word for it. They're not
like,
pirates.
Right.
You know, they're
sailors?
Men of the sea. Sailors. Well, we'll find out they're not precisely sailors,
right,
but we'll find out
that,
what
yeah,
they are.
Right, okay.
But they're covered in algae, and they're sort of like, we're not seeing them full on. So we'll see them a little bit later. We're sort of obscured, but we know they're nautical. They're wet. They sound wet because downstairs, the third guy is sort of trying to turn on the power. He's like, there's a huge ship right beside us. Al, wait, did you get wet? Because he hears the squelching. Unfortunately, the ghosts squelch when they walk. He turns and a ghost stabs him twice, wetly in the face.
Oh, God.
Stevie.
Getting stabbed in the face.
And
not
it sounds
for me.
Like the eye.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you'd have to not hit a boat. So it's like you're either going eye or like cheek mouth.
Yeah.
Oof.
So needless to say, three trawler fishermen brutally murdered. Right off the bat, Stevie tells his listeners, it's 12:43. So this has all happened in the last 43 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
Mayhem in the town, ghoulish sailors descending on the Seagrass, murdering everybody. She's like, I have four in the row just right for you. Let me play them now. So again, she owns a radio station and a lighthouse. So she has to work constantly. But also, like, what kind of money did that make back then? Because
it
either could have been like, I'm struggling or I'm a millionaire. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I have no
she
understanding
be
of that.
Richest person in town or like she sleeps under her desk. I don't know like what that is.
Yeah. Dan, the weatherman calls back and says, you lied. The fog bank has shifted due west and has probably missed that whole area. So that ship wouldn't have run into it. She's like, oh, that's weird. My gauges must be wrong. I have the wind blowing east. What kind of fog moves against the wind though? You're right. It's probably my problem. And again, she looks out. The fog bank starts to dissipate. Dan, the weatherman, asks her out again. She's like, no, my idea of a perfect date is just a voice on the telephone, Dana. This is good date enough for me. Which is a 1980, don't ask me out again. I don't want to do that. Meanwhile, Elizabeth the hitchhiker has gone home and slept with Nick the driver, which again, I was very bold, but okay. I guess we're doing people
something like to that. Do.
And she shows him she is doing drawings and selling them so she could fund her way to Vancouver. And he says, oh, can I pay you for one of these? And she says, that one's on the house. Allison, there is a knock on the door, which looked like interior doors, like almost like those Japanese like interior doors with like you could sort of see through them. There's obviously a haunted sailor of some sort standing behind it.
Yes, of course.
And the person we see from the other side is knocking on the door with a fish hook. And then once the knocking doesn't work, the sailor presses the doorbell. But when Nick approaches the door, he has to turn the key to unlock the door. That's a fire hazard. I don't like those doors.
No.
The glass on his grandfather clock explodes. And in that moment, he turns. It's 1 a.m. And of course, we hear Stevie Wayne say, it's 1 a.m., end of the witching hour. So now at least we know the parameters.
Okay. 1 a.m.
on the
dot.
Nick opens the door.
It's over.
Yes. And then Nick opens the door. There's no one there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So between midnight and 1, the ghosts show up and kill. And they also, which I thought was funny, can't open doors.
Right. Like, they can do all this other stuff. They arrive with fog, but
they're
held up by, like, plywood?
Yeah. This is why I say, like, I enjoy this movie. I don't think this is necessarily going to enter into the pantheon of great John Carpenter films. When it's like, okay, they can, they have a sundry level of swords and fish hooks and insane machinacea. They cannot open a door, and they will not open that door. In the morning, we see Stevie's son, Andy. He sees a gold coin in the surf, and when the wave comes back over it, it turns into a piece of driftwood that has washed up on the beach, and it has the word Dane on it. And he grabs it, he runs back to the house, and he shows it to his mom, who's just waking up, and she looks, she's like, oh, cool, a wet piece of wood. Thanks, son. Meanwhile, Nick and Elizabeth go down to the dock. It turns out Nick also works on the trawler, Seagrass, and it should be back by now. So his coworker's there, and his coworker's like, you know, they were probably just drunk. They're just running late.
Yeah.
Nick's like, Al's an incredible captain. We've gotten drunk a million times. Everything always gets done. We're always back here.
Right.
So they're drunk, bitch. We're always drunk. We're fishermen.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? And he wouldn't pull a stunt like this. So I think something has gone really wrong. Something is wrong, I tell you. Nick tells Elizabeth, I'm going to go find this guy named Ashcroft, and he's going to have a boat. We're going to start driving around because I'm afraid something might have happened, like some sort of power failure, or I'm just nervous.
Something.
And she's like, can I join you? And he's like, yeah, I thought you were going to Vancouver. She's like, I'll get there eventually. Basically, it's like, this was just a character to get Jamie Lee Curtis in the movie, which I think is great.
Yes, worth it.
Allison, finally we meet up with Mayor Kathy Williams, played by the incredible Janet Leigh, and she and her assistant Nancy, played by Nancy Loomis, Sandy, her assistant Sandy, played by Nancy Loomis. They are going through the details of the centennial celebration, which again is this evening.
Yeah.
We got a candlelit walk. We have a series of speeches from the council members, and we're unveiling a new statue.
What an event.
And then I know it's like no one even mentions like food
right.
or parades
or like a real announcement. Yeah.
Yeah, popcorn, and then Mary Kathy says, and then I'm going to go home and pass out. I'm like, that is the most state. That's going to make you pass out? But I do think, like, this is what she thinks the celebration is, right? Yeah. And Mary Kathy goes, oh, God, the candles, did you get those? Oh, God, the promotional materials. Sandy says, ordered, everything is all set. And Mary Kathy says, you know, Sandy, you could be a really annoying person at times, but you really keep me on track. And she's constantly telling Sandy that she's annoying, which I thought was a very funny sort of dynamic for them. Meanwhile, Stevie throws this piece of wood that has the word Dane on it in her amazing orange Jeep. She looks phenomenal. She's listening to a classical music station, but a Coast Guard bulletin breaks through because they are like a coastal town, alerting them that the seagrass has disappeared entirely.
That's not good.
Not at all. And the Coast Guard has begun a sweep south and will be in the area of Spivey Point in about 1 hour. If you sight this vessel or any evidence of it, please notify the Coast Guard immediately. This is an emergency. Meanwhile, we see this guy Ashcroft drive Nick and Elizabeth out into the mist, but just regular weather. It's not fog, and they
just
find
general mist.
The seagrass. Exactly. We also find out as Mayor Kathy and Sandy are driving up out of town, Mayor Kathy is married to Al. So basically, the captain of the seagrass is the mayor's husband.
Okay.
And Sandy goes, oh my God, Mrs. Williams. But Mayor Kathy's already in denial mode. It's like, no, I called the Coast Guard. I didn't sleep at all. My dog was barking for 1 hour exactly from midnight 1 a.m. But I'm sure that it's fine. I'm sure he's not been murdered by ghosts. That would be crazy. Everything's fine. We have to get ready for the centennial celebration. Sandy's like, yeah, it's crazy. All the car alarms are going off for a year. It's funny. We make it to 100 years and this place just falls apart. And the mayor's like, God, I find you annoying.
Yeah.
Back on the seagrass, our trio arrives and they find water the generator and nobody, right? So it is deserted, abandoned, no power, water the generator. Doesn't look good. We see Mayor Kathy and Sandy arrive at the next generation, which is the church, because Mayor Kathy's next project that she wants to pitch to the board is the restoration of the Morgantown Road Cemetery. So this is their historic cemetery. Sandy says it's going to cost a lot. She's like, come on, Sandy. Okay, can we get it together by next month so we can pitch the numbers, for God's sake? Sandy says, yes, ma'am. And Mayor Kathy says, you know, Sandy, you're the only person who can make yes, ma'am sound like screw you. So they're kind of like at each other's throats in a really fun way. And before they knock on the door of the church, Mayor Kathy goes, let's just hope he's not in his cups, which a phrase I always associate for drinking with drop dead gorgeous, because I believe they used that at one point.
Yes.
They find Father Malone inside, or rather he finds them and drags them into his study to read the journal.
Okay.
And we have a number of very damning entries. December 9th, 1880, met with Blake for the first time this evening. He stood in the shadows, so I couldn't see his face. What a vile disease this is. He's a rich man with a cursed condition, but that does not prevent him from trying to better his situation and that of his comrades at the colony, the leper colony. Allison.
Okay.
Meanwhile, back over on the seagrass, Nick and the gang starts to search the cabin, trying to figure out what's going on. She's like, it's covered in rust. Every single gauge is broken. Like, the clock, like, my clock shattered. The same thing happened here. The thermometer's broken, but there's no evidence of seawater in here. It just got incredibly cold. So it's like the mercury stuck at 20 degrees. How could that possibly? It's not like it sank. How did this happen? Back to the church. December 11th. Blake's proposition is to relocate the colony from Tanzier Island to just north of here. He's just purchased a ship called the Elizabeth Dane and asked only for permission to settle here. I must balance my sympathy for him and his fellow men and my revulsion at the thought of a leper colony being a mile away from here. Again, you're a priest. I feel like, I'm sorry, but like you have to be nice.
Yes, you do.
Right?
That's like, the rule. What I think their whole deal is.
Yeah, like I don't think you have to quote unquote balance treating them as human beings and your revulsion. I think you have to say, I'm struggling.
Yes,
that's fair.
This is difficult.
But I, a man of God, I'm in fact, that's my only job.
You gross pieces of shit. Get them out of here.
Right.
That's not your... Especially like leprosy, which I know is like in the Bible, I think.
Right. Exactly. It's almost like you are obligated to be the one person who's nice specifically to lepers.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, on the ship, Elizabeth grabs a radio and finds it on. And they find, of course, a bunch of empty beer cans in the bunk area. And she says, what's it like? He's like, oh, you know, you have a couple and the room starts spinning. She's like, not drinking, fishing. He's like, oh.
What's drinking like?
Again, some funny moments here. He's like, I don't know what happened. Like, I cleaned this entire ship 2 days ago. This is a fucking mess. This is insane. Allison, April 20th. The six of us met tonight and planned the death of Blake and his comrades.
Sick 420, bro.
I tell myself that Blake's gold will help us settle the town and establish a church, but it doesn't soothe my horror at being an accomplice to murder. First of all, you're not an accomplice. You and five other dudes are going to murder these people. You're not an accomplice. You are doing it with them, right? Second of all, this guy was a priest. Back at the boat, Nick and Elizabeth wait for the Coast Guard. And Elizabeth apologized. She's like, you know, I feel like I'm bad luck. This kind of stuff happens. You know, like I came here and all this stuff falls to shit. He's like, I don't believe in luck. You can't blame yourself for this. That being said, one time my father, also a fisherman, and his co-worker saw a brig headed straight for them. No one on deck. They boarded the ship and found it deserted. But they found a steaming cup of coffee on the table, sitting on a rusted tin dish that looked like no one had moved it for 100 years. And my father found a gold coin from Spain. It was dated 1867. He put the coin in his pocket to take it home, but when he opened his pocket to give it to me, it's gone. I thought it was some kind of joke, but now I just don't know. Literally, one of the fishermen's corpses falls out of the bunk area on top of Elizabeth, and she screams. back at church. Father Malone reads the most important passage, Allison, yes. from April 21st, 1880. The deed is done. Blake was fooled by our false fire, and we were aided by the unearthly fog. God, forgive us for what we've done. And Father Malone turns to the mayor and to Sandy and says, our celebration tonight is a travesty. We're honoring murderers. Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
Move?
That's funny, Ellie. Just get out of there.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I could just go to a different city and not have, like, all this nonsense going on. You know, I'd plan to have some food at the Centennial. But aside from that, I think I'd just leave. I'd be like, this is all weird, and I don't want to be a part of it anymore. So
I'm sorry. This is so weird, and I don't want to be a part of it.
It's like,
and why isn't it midnight?
Yeah. We got a radio running out of a lighthouse, and the priest is drunk and reading an old journal, and there's, like, a ship with some dead people on it that was in order 3 days ago. I don't know. Maybe it's just time to take even a vacation.
I need a vacation from this vacation.
From this vacation town.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Allison, Stevie gets from her house to the radio station / lighthouse, and she has to walk down all these steps. And because it's 1980, she has heels on.
Of course.
I was like, girl, you are going to die one of these days, and probably today because of the ghost thing. But yeah. If not, you're going to trip and fall on those heels.
Right. Very dangerous.
Back at church, Father Malone realizes, I found the journal after midnight when the town started to go bad. At the time, six conspirators met. So he's saying, like, oh, midnight must have been when the conspirators met to light the fire. So that's why it's the cursed hour where they were luring this ship to crash against the rock and kill all these lepers. And Mary Cathy goes, well, there's not much we can do about that at this point. Oh, that's the way the club crumbles. So will you come do the benediction? And Father Malone says, no, Antonio Bay has a curse on it. And Sandy goes, so I take that as a no? Again, fucking funny. Over in the lighthouse, Stevie, she's smoking a cig. She brought in the piece of wood that says Dane on it. And when she turns to look out at the beautiful, gorgeous water of Antonio Bay, the water starts to generate out of the piece of wood. Like, it starts leaking water. It's soaking wet. Mm. It starts soaking the tapes and the tape player she is playing that plays the ads, basically. So when she's not on, it just plays like a cycle of ads. When it starts to slow down, the voice starts to drop, and it becomes a man's voice, and it says, it hangs like a millstone around the neck. Damn them all! And the tape player explodes into flames.
Okay.
And she is forced to spray it with a fire extinguisher, but not before seeing that instead of Dane, it says the word, six must die. And then she puts it out, and it says Dane again. Six must die, Allison.
Okay.
We've had three die so far.
It's ready to go.
Nick and Elizabeth take the dead body back to shore in Ashcroft's boats. And apparently the body they found is this guy, Dick. So one of their coworkers. They didn't find the other two guys that we know of. Allison, in Dick's body, they found water in his lungs. He had salt caked around his mouth and nose. His clothes are soaked in algae and salt water. But he was dry and he was in the boat. It's like, how can a man dry and drown land? He looked like he was underwater for days. It didn't just look like he fell and they dragged him out.
Right.
He looked like bloated, like from the water.
Waterlogged, yeah.
Stevie calls Andy he's at his babysitter, Mrs. Cobert's house, to ask him where he got the wood again. He's like, it was a beach. I told you it was a gold coin, and then it turned into a piece of wood, and I'm seven. And you didn't believe me, but I was telling you what happened because there's ghosts or whatever. She says, do not leave the house tonight. It's like, bitch, it's a celebration. I want to go to the candlelit vigil. I want to see the statue of seven. But he says, okay, I'll stay here, Mrs. Cobritz. Stevie turns on the radio for her shift, and she goes, ahoy, mateys. It's so good.
I love it. I miss radio. Yeah.
I do. It was so fun because you could call in. Yes. I know this is.
And seems, like dedicate we're dating songs ourselves. And make requests. And
I remember being over at my friend Whitney's house, and all of our friends were over, and we listened to the oldies station because we all loved oldies because yes. we were nerds.
Yes, I also loved oldies.
Uh-huh. And we would call in requests. And then, so then like you, the other, your friends would go in the other room and hear you on the radio. Because yes. they didn't like it when yeah. the radio was on the same room.
Right. You couldn't have the same like, yeah. the free, whatever. It like, I'm not gonna say pretend I know what that science is.
I was really impressed that you were really going to go there.
Yeah.
I remember calling and winning a radio contest, but I couldn't tell you what it was. It was some very minor thing, but I remember calling it and knowing some oldies fact.
Yeah. I definitely was like a radio call-in person. And I think I like won a contest once too. And yeah.
Well, there you have it, folks.
We love the radio.
At the coroner's office, we find out the corpse was a guy named Dick. The coroner takes Nick into the hallway to sort of talk to him. Again, because ladies present, we don't want to hear Elizabeth hear all these things that are going to happen to her in 5 minutes.
Right.
And we find out Dick's corpse had its ocular cavities punctured to the brain. His lungs are full of liquid, presumably salt water, algae underneath his fingernails. The coroner says, I knew this guy. He looks like he's been in water at least over 10 days.
Right.
I saw him in Salinas alive 3 days ago.
Right. That is
I can't
fishy.
Explain it. And Nick says, I know. In the boat was covered in rust. It looked like it had been out there for years. It was, I heard from them yesterday. Nick suddenly starts shivering. He says, do you feel that? Elizabeth is waiting in the morgue with the body, and she starts shivering. But of course, she makes, again, horror movie mistake, horror movie rule number 5,675,000.
Yes.
Do not stand with your back to a dead body.
Ever.
Just don't do it. You just don't know what's going on. Okay?
Ever.
Because in this case, we see the corpse's hand reach out and grab a scalpel and stand up.
Naturally.
The coroner tells Nick, I'm telling you, something's going on. Elizabeth screams. The men run in, and they find the body on the ground having attacked her. And we see that the corpse, which is now collapsed, has a scratch in the linoleum, the number 3. Mm. Great, great news for everybody. We're at the celebration, which they don't in any way explain this or address this. But it has to be at like 11 p.m.
Of course.
Right. Like it doesn't add up. There's not enough celebration. What I don't understand is like, why not make it an all day thing?
Yeah. Culminating yeah. at midnight.
Yeah. I don't.
For a thing.
To what end? Like a parade, festival, fun.
Yeah. Some music playing.
Dancing.
And, you know, speakers.
And then later, oh, it's late, but we should have done the.
Now we do midnight
stuff. Now it's
stuff.
Late. We're going to do a yeah. candlelight vigil and reveal the statue, and it's in the goddamn middle of the night. And so the celebration is just a councilman talking to people in bleachers about the town and how great the town is.
Well, the wrecking of that beautiful ship upon our coast was, of course, a tragedy to those who were in the ship. It still was the catalyst that brought together all of the people of this wonderful area.
Meanwhile, we see Nick and Elizabeth are meeting up with Mayor Kathy, and the sheriff is there in sort of a near, and Sandy, of course, in the bar sort of behind the stage, and they are telling her about Dick and the seagrass. He's sort of like, hey, just so you know, we didn't find your husband yet, but we're good to see what's not good.
There's some other stuff going on.
Yeah, and the sheriff says, well, we have the boat, and obviously the Coast Guard's going to keep looking. And Sandy says, well, ma'am, maybe you shouldn't talk at the celebration. Mayor Kathy's like, I can't let everyone see me cry. That's exactly what I should do. It's exactly what this town needs. It's a celebration. And just because my husband was murdered by ghosts, that's for tomorrow. And she storms out to be the mayor that this town needs. Meanwhile, Nick and Elizabeth stay behind. Everyone else goes over to the celebration. In the bar, they're listening, of course, to Stevie's show. That's what everyone listens to. And Nick hears her say, keep an eye out for that fog we had last night. And he's like, oh, okay. Mm. So she knows about the fog. Nick calls into Stevie's radio station, not on the radio, just like separately. She's
yeah.
like, yeah, I saw, because of her vantage point, she saw the fog before everybody else. And it was glowing. It was moving right. against the wind. And she thought it was weird, but she's like, I didn't associate it with anything.
What do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Who do you call?
You're like,
Ghostbusters?
Well, okay.
And she says, 1 second. And then she flips back to the radio and she says, stay tuned. I'll be checking in with the weatherman. And we see Dan, the weatherman, driving to his weather station. He says, the weatherman's ready to check in with you too, because they're just going to call and flirt over the phone. Nick and Elizabeth decide they're going to head to the lighthouse to talk to Stevie, sort of about what she saw with regards to the wood and what they saw in the boat. Because they're like, okay, we're going to get together, put our facts and figures together, figure out what the fuck is going on. Meanwhile, Dan calls into Stevie to say that another fog bank is rolling in. And it's going to be hitting his he's the old weather station on Old Russellville Road. And it'll hit him first because he's furthest out, I guess. And he's like, oh, it should be about 10 minutes. And I'm like, my God, the precision of these fog reports. Of course, she asks, well, where's the fog now? She's like, it's got to be right outside my door. What's the big deal? It's just fog. Allison, the lights in the weather station go out. And there's a knock at the door. Again, it's the doors that hold these ghosts back. If it wasn't for these damn doors.
Thank God for doors.
Thank God. I guess they're like vampires. You know what I mean? Thank God they have some decorum like vampires do.
Yeah, they're like knocking and they're like,
oh God, I'm trying to remember. There's some comedian who had a joke where it's like vampires had to follow more rules than cops do. And there's something about that's really funny.
Oh, I feel like I've
Jordan
seen
Temple or somebody. Bit. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, someone terrific. If that's you,
shout out.
Good for you.
Great Stevie bit. Yells on the phone, Dad, don't open the door. But of course, he assumes it's celebration night. It's a centennial. Someone's probably played a dumb prank on me. He throws.
Right. Everybody's obsessed with the candlelight
stuff. There was up all night knocking on doors.
All hyped up.
Spraying gasoline all over the place, stabbing people in the fucking ocular cavities. Dan throws open the door. No one's there. And he says, see, and he literally says something like, someone must be really taking the 100-year-old story a little too seriously.
Yeah.
Allison, an ancient mariner's ghost, grabs Dan by the throat. And Stevie hears him scream and fall silent. And then a very funny moment where she like silently hangs up the phone. It's like, well, okay, I guess Dan's killed by a ghost. Back at the celebration, Mayor Kathy is finally, she's going to close it out. They're going to do the candlelight walk to the statue and the revealed statue. And I thought the statue is going to be like, we're going to see it. It's like, you just see it. It's fine. And
it's just like a statue. And it's like, okay.
And she's like, I thought they were going to pull the sheet off and it'd be one of the ghosts or something. But it doesn't play into the plot. And Mary Kathy goes, well, shout out to the men and women. But let's be honest, mostly men who built this great town on the backs of greed and depravity and the homicide of multiple disabled people, go Chargers. Like, she's just like, hey, who's to say what a town is? But our town's great. And if we're all murdered by ghosts, it's not because of that stuff we did. Okay. Meanwhile,
okay, bye-bye.
Stevie calls for the sheriff to go over and check on Dan. Because she's like, well, if nothing else, I think he's actually dead. So, like, that's evidence, you know? Yeah. Unfortunately, he calls her back. But just as she answers, the fog blows in and her power goes down in the lighthouse. And part of me, I would need to do more research into the production, because the fact is, from the now going forward, Adrienne Barbeau is separated from the rest of it. So everyone else is together, and she is in the lighthouse. So it makes me think like maybe she was filming something else and couldn't be on set, because otherwise it's just her in a lighthouse screaming and fighting ghosts, which is fun. But you'd think naturally she would go to her son and that kind of stuff.
At some point, she'd like reconnect with anyone else in the film.
Yeah, but no, she's just going to be fighting sailor ghosts all alone. Finally, it's time for the oft imitated, never reproduced candlelit procession to the statue unveiling. The fog gets inside the town's power plant and plunges the whole town into darkness. Luckily, they were doing the candlelit walk, so they're like, okay, I guess that's fine. And as Stevie looks out her window at the dark, completely dark bay, she sees the glowing fog roll in. And she goes, Andy! Andy and his babysitter, Mrs. Coberts, are like kind of having fun. They're like setting up candles because her power is out too. And they're also not being killed by fog ghouls yet. Unfortunately, she looks outside, sees the house being overwhelmed with fog. Fortunately, Stevie's able to get her generator going and tries to call Miss Coberts, but Miss Coberts' power is out. So it's Miss Cobert with Andy.
No phone. Yeah.
They're separated from. So, but luckily, Stevie has the radio. So she starts broadcasting, someone help my son, my son. And she keeps saying, my son is trapped by the fog. And she says, Andy, get out of the house, run. So I think she's supposing that once the fog gets to your house, they'll just kill you.
Yes.
And I guess that's true. But then it's also like, well, how many people have they killed? Because like they had three, and then they killed Dan. Dan, the weatherman. So it's like, I guess they wouldn't care if they kill a child. We don't know if that's one of their rules. But she's like, get out of the house. But I'm like, isn't he just going to run into the fog? Regardless, she's in a panic. She's doing the best she can with the information she has. Miss Copert starts to get nervous about all the fog, sends Andy to his room. But before he can even get down the hall, Allison, she opens the front door. And she is, of course, dragged into the fog and torn apart by the souls of the dead inhabitants of the Elizabeth Kane, who, of course, were members of the leper colony.
Leper community, yes.
Killed by the town. Andy calls out from his Cobritz, and like he has like the door to his room closed, and like a hook just hacks through it. He says, "Miss Cobritz?" Doesn't seem like her style.
Nope. Not really. That's not.
I didn't see her
not
hook.
Not a hook, yeah.
Oh, check out my new hook. Good.
It's like, oh, you're introducing a new hook to your look.
Fortunately, because Stevie was calling for help for her son on the radio, complete, and she says the address, like, please go to my address, because Miss Cobritz came over to their house. Nick and Elizabeth, who are driving, they are able to get to the house in time to save him. Unfortunately, of course, classically, when Elizabeth goes to turn the truck on again and get out of there, we're spinning on mud. And in the rear view mirror, we see at least a good baker's dozen figures emerge out of the fog, draped fog, in algae, squelching with seawater, and desperate for revenge. Allison, who will survive?
Who
is around?
There's a lot of people up. Okay.
It's a lot of people. I like, there's part of me that's like, the whole town gets decimated, but I know that's not it. I think radio woman whose name I'm now blanking
Stevie.
On. Stevie. She's going to make it. Who else?
We need two more bodies
for like it to hit six, right?
Yeah. Well, Mrs. Cobra's just got killed.
Okay, so
we
more.
Really just need one more.
Okay.
So of the people, who do you think of the following people will be killed? We have got Stevie and her son, Andy. We have got Mayor Kathy and Sandy.
I want them to survive and keep on doing what they're doing.
Yeah, we've got Nick and Elizabeth.
Uh-huh.
We've got Father Malone.
Father Malone dies.
Okay,
because he knows the truth, and that's the ultimate person who needs to go. All this fog stuff is reminding me, I think I mentioned it already once on the pod, but Dave Attell has a really good bit all about fog in his latest Netflix special.
What's his take? Like, what is his?
He's talking about fog. He's like, you know, you talk a certain way. He's like, you know, hark, who goes there? You know, fog talk.
That's funny.
It's fog talk.
Also, I want to be clear. I picked this movie for the fog. This is set in April, I want to be clear. I know that.
Yes.
But to me, I said the fog. To me, fog's fall weather.
Fog is fall wet, like a foggy. I think about like October, November is like when you wake up early and there's like still a lot of like fog around.
Yeah, and I guess there is fog in the spring, but it's an autumnal experience.
Yes, I agree.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Back at the centennial celebration, the sheriff tells Mayor Kathy, we got to wrap it up, okay? And Mayor Kathy goes, well, I mean, in 5 or 10 minutes, everyone will have seen the statue. Well, famously, Mayor Kathy, the thing about statues, you can see them anytime.
Anytime.
So if you don't
doesn't
see
them
right
away.
Now, it's going to be there forever.
Forever.
They can see it tomorrow while they're not being murdered by ghosts.
Yes.
At this point, Stevie's just narrating when the fog reaches different roads.
It's moving faster now. Up Regent Avenue, up to the end of Small House Road.
Unfortunately, Nick, Elizabeth, and Andy, they finally get their car started, and they're driving. They essentially are driving straight into the fog, right?
Yeah.
As are Mayor Kathy and Sandy, who do get in their car, and they leave the event. Sandy basically forces her to go. So she's telling them, go north. There is something in the fog. Get out of town. Unfortunately, the fog moves in such that it cuts out the road going out of town. So the only place all of them can go is the road that takes them to the old church. So they all independently decide, okay, we're going to go hole up at the old church while Stevie stays at the radio station. Because she's now trapped too. Like the fog is surrounding. She can't. She'd have to literally take 500 steps up.
Right.
Yes, to escape. It does get a little the happening because it's like they're driving to escape fog. But right. They do arrive, and of course, Father Malone is wasted, but has them come in, and they all hide in his study. And we see the fog, you know, surround the lighthouse, and finally there's a banging on the lighthouse door. Meanwhile, the gang of six is putting all the pieces together, right? So, like, okay, Elizabeth saw the letter three. I mean, I guess Nick did. Saw the three the corpse drew. They don't know about Dan, the weatherman, being killed. But Andy knows about Mrs. Kravitz being killed. So they're like, okay, well, they're definitely not done. They at least, we have at least one more killing for the, because mm-hmm. they believe it's for the stand-in. The six is for the six conspirators. So they're just taking six lives from Antonio Bay into to recompense. And Father Malone, to your point, says, they should take me. I'm the man, this man's descendant. Like, if anything, it's like, it's only fair. It shouldn't be anyone else. They should take me.
Right, if they're upset about this history.
Yeah.
Here's the person who represents it today.
Yeah. Allison, meanwhile, Kathy finds a journal entry that declares, the men think someone's stolen Blake's treasure, but it was me. If Blake were alive, I'd return his fortune, but instead, God's temple is the temple of gold. So not only did he kill all these people with leprosy to steal the money, he then stole the money from the five other conspirators and stashed it in the church.
Sure.
Allison, the windows start exploding. The ghosts realize they could just explode windows. They don't really have to deal with the door so
much. No more door work.
And the fog, of course, starts rolling into the church. Meanwhile, the door bursts open at the lighthouse. We see a ghoulish, wet hand come in, and she's having to fight them off. So it's an onslaught on the church just at the same time as an onslaught at the lighthouse. And we're sort of pulled between them. We see the Father Malone and Mayor Kathy realize, okay, so he means that literally. Like, God's temple is a tomb of gold. He hid gold in here. The gold is still here. That's why they're here. That's what the premise are going on. They started pulling the stones through the wall, searching for where could this gold treasure, you know, be that they've stole from this ship of people. Stevie runs upstairs, and she gets out of the outer railing, and then to escape the ghost has to get on top of, like, the pointed metal roof of the lighthouse. And she's in heels.
He's
in heels the entire time. And she looks good doing it. Allison, behind the wall, Mayor Kathy and Father Malone find a giant gold cross. He says, my God, he melted the gold down into this cross. And I'm like, boy, that really does say it all. I think that's the point of what John Carpenter is trying to say. Because it's like, not only did you kill these people and take this money, you also ripped off everyone else. And then you didn't even use the money for anything. Like, you just hoarded it.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like what the church does.
Yeah. That's like,
you know, at a certain level. Yeah. It's just sort of like, oh, okay, I get it.
Money.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the ghost grabs Sandy by the hair and start hauling her across the church. And Father Malone grabs the cross. And he goes into the nave, the place with the pews, and he finally confronts, we see a ghost with glowing red eyes, and he says, Blake! And the ghost turns to him, and it's the ghost of Blake, the head leper, the king leper, the wealthiest leper of them all. And he says, I have your gold. And he offers him the cross of gold. Meanwhile, again, Stevie is being forced by a ghost with sort of a hooked pole up onto the roof of the lighthouse. She's scrabbling around. It's wet. It's all fog. Back at the church, Father Malone tells the ghost of Blake, take me. I am the sixth conspirator. I am his descendant. Take me. We cut back. Stevie sees the ghost behind her and climbs up and turns. And in front of her is another ghost who stabs her in the shoulder.
No.
With the fish hook. And she slides to the edge, almost falls off the roof, and instead runs into the green, maggot-filled, writhing face of...
Don't need that.
A ghost from the Elizabeth Dane. And the rest of the gang rush into the nave of the church just as Blake's ghost grabs the gold cross, and it glows like this, like, brilliant, fiery glow. And we see Father Malone's face sort of, like, he's screaming. And the cross starts smoking as Blake's eyes burn red. And Father Malone collapses. And Blake sort of explodes.
Oh.
And then they disappear. And suddenly the church is silent. Because I guess that is what they wanted after all.
Yeah.
Allison, Father Malone is alive and the ghosts are gone. Everyone has survived. The ghosts really wanted their money after all.
Yeah, I get it.
And Stevie looks up, the ghosts are gone, and she is safe and sound on the roof of a lighthouse in heels. And we see the gang walk outside. We see sort of the shot of, like, it's obviously they're playing smoke, the fog in reverse.
Yes, right.
And I think even Andy even says, like, the fog's leaving. It's like, bitch, we have an eye on the fog. We have
Got
eyes.
It.
We know exactly what's going on. And Stevie finally signs off and says,
"To the ships at sea who can hear my voice, look across the water into the darkness. Look for the fog."
And everyone goes home, and Father Malone is left in the church to wonder, well, why didn't it take me? I mean, I was the sixth, and isn't that what I deserve? Just kidding, Allison. The fog rolls in under the church door, and Blake returns and decapitates Malone in the last, like, 4 seconds.
Yeah, right
the
before one.
Fog.
Oh, wow.
Yay.
Yeah, it needed. They needed to hit their six. And
they
I'm glad
needed
they did.
It. They needed it, and they deserved it. Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think were made in the film The Fog?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, I think building a town on, you know, murdering disabled people, and that's not good.
When you put it that way.
Yeah. But then in present day, I guess, like, having all of your centennial celebrations happen so close to midnight.
Yeah. That's the thing. He just kind of was like, whatever, you get it. Like, at a certain point where it's like, this would be a 5, 6 p.m.
This is a daytime event. A statue to look at during the day.
A daytime. Maybe it was like maybe 9 at the absolute latest if you want to do the candle thing.
Right. Sure.
But then everyone's going home. This is a daytime event. It's all day.
All day.
A petting zoo, face painting for the kids earlier, and then you go to bed. Yeah.
Other than that, I mean.
Yeah, being greedy. Being a terrible priest.
Being greedy.
But being like, oh, I feel bad about doing all this horrible stuff. Well, you still have time to not do it.
Yeah.
You always have time to not do future
bad
stuff.
Yes.
So if you're writing in your journal, I don't want to help murder all these people with leprosy, don't do it.
Don't do it.
And then where would you place this movie on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
It's like a 2.
Yeah, I think a 2 is good.
A 2 feels right. It's like, you know, the waterlogged body is getting stabbed in the eye.
Yeah.
That's kind of gross. And I think the imagery of the fog is kind of spooky.
I think the reason it is not as scary as it's going to be is that John Carpenter, he's an incredible director. But in this movie, he did not want to kill his darlings.
Yeah.
Elizabeth should be dead. Sandy and Mary Kathy should be dead. Nick should be dead.
Yeah. We had not a high enough body count of people we care about to be like horrified by what's happening. So it's just kind of like, okay.
And I would have said I would say Dan the weatherman should have been a full love interest. Cut out the sheriff.
Yes.
And then he's the last to die. And he and Steve, you know what I mean? It's like somebody did a noble thing.
There's ways to do this.
Yeah. But yeah, I still enjoyed it. But I was like, by the end of it, I'm like, half of you should be dead. It should be Stevie and Andy still standing, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, in my
opinion. Yeah.
If you actually wanted this to be scary.
But the John Carpenter score brings it to a 2
so
from
good.
Yeah,
from like,
one,
I mean, so. It's so fun, and like, it genuinely is funny in a lot of different parts. So yeah, 2 for scary, 8 for enjoyment, I would say.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening.
Yes. Thank you.
And until next time,
please keep it cozy.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Ruin Podcast,
or join us at patreon.com/ruinpodcast for exclusive episodes and video content.
Ruin is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa and Olivia Posner.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.